Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a whole new edition of Outside the Box Radio. I'm Alex Hansery, coming to you from way off the grid in the high desert, San Luis Valley of South Central Colorado. We have an amazing show for you tonight. Max Egan is our guest. TheCrowHouse.com is his website, and he's got a number of podcasts that I recommend listeners of this show take a look at. It's a great addition to your iPod and great information for other people to listen to. Max has a lot of very interesting philosophical ideas on the nature of reality, the systems of control, and of course, real tangible solutions that are available to all of us. So we're going to be talking about a lot of things with Max tonight. But first, I have a very special announcement. And I want to thank Bob in Chicago who called into the show when I was talking to Freeman about a month ago. I'm going to be flying to the Free Your Mind Conference coming up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, April 25th, 26th, and the 27th. I will be speaking on the topic of solar flares and their effect on human consciousness, cycles of war that correlate with periods of solar activity, in particular the solar maximum portion of the 11-year solar cycle. And so I'm very excited to be able to present my ideas to so many of my peers, so many friends, so many people that I've interviewed on the show over the years, but I've never met. In a way, I kind of see the Free Your Mind Conference as a pilgrimage of like minds. And so if you have a chance, go ahead and go over to freeyourmindconference.com. And if this is something that interests you, there's going to be a lot of people there. And this is going to be held right around the area where the Liberty Bell is, right in downtown Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's a town I've always wanted to go to. You know, I've been to New York. I've been to Washington, D.C. You know, I've been to Dallas now. I lived in Portland, and now I'm in Colorado. But there's something about Philadelphia that's always fascinated me. So I'm very, very grateful to have this opportunity, and I want to thank Mark Passio for making this possible. There's going to be a number of speakers at the event, as you can see from the FreeYourMindConference.com website. Laura Eisenhower is going to be there. So will be Bob Tuscan, who we talked to last month, I believe, or the month before. Lennon Honor, Kathy O'Brien, Jim Fetzer, Alfred Weber, and a whole host of other individuals. And again, I'm, you know, this is something that I kind of need right now, being having been out in the desert now for, well, since November 17th. And so with that, we are now going to go to Max. Max, are you with us?
Certainly am. Thanks for having me on the show again, Alex. Nice to connect with you again.
It is. I believe I talked to you last time when I was still living in Portland, Oregon, before I left the West Coast on Access Television. I think it was the first year that you started doing podcasts. Was it 2008?
I don't think it was 2008. It might have been 2009 or 2010, but it was a really, really bad connection. I was living right up in the mountains, and I had a wireless connection, and it just kept dropping out, and we just couldn't even get a conversation going. So I remember it being a very disastrous day. So it's nice to talk to you with a good connection, brother.
It is. Thank you very much. You know, because I've been off the grid. It's every week it seems that I'm driving to a different place. Now, you talked about going to Peru recently and having an expansion of your consciousness, a new awakening, and new concepts that flooded into your mind after this trip. Tell us a little bit about what Max has been doing and some of the things you've been talking about lately on your podcast.
Well, the trip to Peru, like the experience that I had there was quite remarkable, really. I mean, it was more of a confirmation of what I'd been saying for so long more than anything, but it was a really remarkable series of synchronistic events that created that whole trip around the world that I did last year. And the fact that I went to Peru first, and this was like a gift, I just got gifted this 10 days in Peru. Gee, thanks for coming. So I went and did it. And it gave me a really, really different perspective because I had some pretty remarkable experiences and I was still processing them. And as I was processing them, I kind of went out from Peru in the third world and the jungle, the Amazon, out into Costa Rica and then from there into Spain and through Europe and ended up in England and ended up through Egypt and Gaza as well, went to Ireland, all sorts of places. And because I was still processing what happened on the Peru trip, it gave me a completely different perspective of the world to what I would have had I not done Peru first. Because it just there was something that happened in Peru. There was one experience that I had, one ceremony that I had, where most of my higher senses came online, if not all of them. And I was actually able to communicate with reality around me in a completely different way to what I normally do. And it was very real. It was absolutely real. I could literally read the energy fields of things, and I could communicate with everything, all of creation. And so I began to see how disconnected we actually are, and how bringing down the system and changing the government structure and addressing the money system and all this sort of stuff, it's all very well, but there's so much more to it than that. You know, even if we were to address all of those things I just mentioned, we are still so disconnected from where we should be and what we are, that it's you've got to wonder how to get back there. It's almost an insurmountable hurdle to get back to where we should be. But going through the trip that I did, I started to see things, and I started to see how it's been done, how the process has been implemented. I started to see the sequence that had been used to disconnect us, and I began to realize that the way to get us back to where we should be is to reverse the sequence. And so that's what I've been sort of working on since then, trying to find a way to reverse this sequence. And I've got a project this year that I'm trying to put together called the Full Circle Project, which is based on all these understandings, and it's just an attempt to go and undo the sequence in people and get us back to where we should be.
What is it about Peru, Max? There's a lot of people that have gone down there, yourself, David Icke, that have come back, and you know, they have a whole set of new ideas to share with the general public. What do you think it is?
It's just some energy in that place. There's some really, really remarkable energy there. I think a lot of it is because of the Amazon, and because of a lot of the energy of the Earth Mother that's still there, whether people call me a pantheist or whatever for saying that. I mean, I experienced this. I literally experienced that feeling of a feminine Earth energy, a feminine Mother energy in Peru. And no, it's not Satanism. It's not Lucifer. It's not all these things the Christians will tell you. It's a very, very real energy. It's the connection to the Earth that we're supposed to have. And look, there's just something very, very remarkable and very special about Peru. I mean, all of the ancient monuments and all the stuff that's there, the Nazca lines, the walls at Sacsayhuaman, and Machu Picchu, all of these things. I mean, the ancients built these things in this place for a reason. You find more of these remarkable things in Peru than anywhere else. I mean, sure, there's a lot of stuff in Mexico. There's a lot of stuff all around Central America, pyramids and things. But there's just something very remarkable about Peru. Especially Machu Picchu. Machu Picchu appears to have been an ancient university that was built according to the Earth grid, according to Earth energy patterns. If you actually go there and look at the place, you look at the magnetic alignments that it's all set up, and the fact that all these compass points, and I mean, there's so much stuff that they've done there. And rocks, certain rocks have been placed in a certain way, which may look completely out of character and completely out of place in the wall, but you'll find that the top of the rock is a perfect compass. So they've done stuff like this, and they really, really knew what they were doing. Now, obviously working with energy fields, and whatever they tell you the place was, I mean, we hear that it was temples and all this sort of stuff for worshipping ancient gods and sacrifice and all this. Well, the guy that I went up there with is actually the traditional owner. He's a man called Cucho, and he's a shaman from South America. When I was there, actually, one of the listeners of my show, it was remarkable because I'm there in Peru, I'm in Lima, and I get a call from someone or an email from someone who says, hey, if you're in Peru, I'm a tour guide at Machu Picchu, and my mentor is the traditional owner of Machu Picchu. How about you contact me and we go out for a tour with the traditional owner? So that was incredible. You know, what's the chances that one of the listeners of my show would be a tour guide at Machu Picchu and have the traditional owner as his friend? So it was $200 to go from Lima back to, you know, so I thought, well, you know, to go from Lima to Cusco and back was $200. I thought, well, I'm in Peru. I've got to go and do this. So I went up there, and he started telling me about the real nature of the place. And he said that it was a place of learning, and that all the, if you look at a picture, a traditional picture you see of Machu Picchu, you've got the mountain wine Picchu in the background, and you've got a big grassy center in the middle, and you've got buildings on each side. Well, as you look at that, the ones on the right, they were all accommodation, and the ones on the left were all places of learning, like they were classrooms, universities. And if you had something, some research you were doing, you could come there, you could set up in one of these university sections, and you could have all the materials you need for your research, and the living quarters were across the courtyard. And once you'd done your research, you'd go, someone else would come and do theirs. So that's kind of what it was. It was a place of learning. So there's some really remarkable energy in Peru. And I don't know, when I got there, the connection that I got to the Amazon and the download that I got from the Amazon was what gave me this completely new view of reality. It kind of confirmed everything I've been saying about my higher senses, and it let me see what these are, let me experience them. And it was like I had the entire Amazon jungle download its emotional journey into me, and I saw the incredible need to preserve the Amazon, to preserve this jungle, because the whole world used to be a jungle. The whole world used to be covered in trees before we cleared it all. Europe used to be covered in trees. Everywhere used to be these jungles, and we used to live in harmony with nature. We used to live in natural surroundings. And, you know, this is a lot of the life on the planet, and it's very, very important life. And it is conscious. Everything's conscious because consciousness creates reality itself. I mean, that's a whole nother show probably, but, you know, there's a real need to preserve this stuff. And that's something I want to do in the Full Circle Project as well, is I want to have tree plantings everywhere we go. And I want to do it in three parts and make three documentaries as I'm traveling. And the first documentary will be the first one that I'm actually going to put up for sale, and because I normally give them away for free. But I want to create a fund that can be used to save the Amazon, purchase big tracts of the Amazon, and hold it in trust for the Shipibo people who live there. So it can't be corporatized, because that's unfortunately what's happening to the Amazon. They're tearing most of it down and planting cacao and stuff like this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Isn't the heavy harvesting of the acai berry and things of that nature that have become really popular in health food stores here in the United States, haven't they contributed the over-harvesting to deforestation in the Amazon and other places?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're tearing down a lot of the jungle, and they're planting these big fields of these things to feed people. And they grow naturally anyway, and we've got other places we can do it. But the Amazon jungle, it's just there. It seems like something that's never-ending, you know. It's just going to last forever, but it's not. It's been torn down at a phenomenal rate for cacao and berries and all sorts of things that have been planted there. And we need to address this, because we can't lose this connection. See, when I saw the connection that we had, and there's very, very few people that still are able to give you that connection and to reconnect and to tell you the old ways and to give you the knowledge of the plants, that really only exists in the Amazon. And there's a special, special energy that exists with the Shipibo people, and we're in danger of losing that. And if we lose that connection, we'll never get it again. We'll never find it again, because the society that we're in is so mechanical, it's so detrimental to us, it's so backward to what we should be and so opposite to anything natural, that we'll never be put in a position to find this stuff again. Kids aren't interested in looking in the Amazon and finding a connection to nature. They're more interested in the latest iPad, you know, and what the latest fashion is and the latest video game. So we're losing that connection, and it's very, very important that we work now to regain it, because it only really exists in the Amazon. That's the last frontier, really, on the earth. It's been taken out of Europe. It's still here in Australia in many places with the Aboriginal people, but they've been brutalized here, and there's virtually none of their culture left. There's nowhere you can go in Australia to find Aboriginal people living in a natural way. You know, it just doesn't happen anymore. But there are still people living in a natural way in South America, and I think it's one of the last places left. I mean, there'd be little pockets in New Guinea. There'd be little pockets here and there around the place, perhaps in Burma, stuff like this. But, you know, most of it is in the Amazon. That's the last vestige of natural humanity, and it needs to be preserved at all costs, because otherwise we won't have a way back. We won't have a way back to what we should be. And I'm not saying we should all go and live in caves and all go and live in the jungle and wear reed skirts and hunt with bows and arrows. I'm saying we need to merge. We need to not lose the old ways. We need to merge the technological present with the shamanistic past. We need to merge it together, because that's how consciousness evolves. You've got to merge the past with the present to create the future. This is Fibonacci sequence. This is how it works. And it works for consciousness as well. It works for everything. It works for all growing stuff and all matter. And, of course, it works the same way for consciousness. So we need to pay attention and we need to preserve these old ways. And that's what I'm trying to do with this Full Circle project. I want people to become aware of it and I want to show them a way back and a way of reining this system in. I mean, we can't let this system go on the way it's going. You know, the ship of state is heading for the rocks. It's heading for the waterfall and it doesn't look like anybody's at the helm. So we've got to rein this in and that's another thing. People are always wanting to just collapse this system, but really we've got to rein it in. We've got to bring it back under control and we've got to reverse the sequence that's brought us to this point. You know, that's the way I believe it's got to be done anyway.
You know, Max, I listened to your podcast last night before I went to sleep, and then even after I went to sleep, you know, my iPod just kept going on repeat. So it was good to get freshed up with some of your recent topics. One of the things that you were discussing is the artificial geometry that is all around us and how it affects us on a conscious level, perhaps subconscious level. And, you know, I've thought for years about how out of balance we might be just from the fact that we live in square homes. And right now I'm living in a circular home, a yurt. And even though that's also artificial and nature's based on spirals, a circle is definitely much more natural than a square. And I can tell you, Max, I have felt the difference.
Oh, you do? Yeah, square walls and flat surfaces and all this stuff. See, I believe that there was an event that took place, and this is something that I saw while I was away, but I can hear the break music, so we'll talk about that after the break, eh?
And we'll come back, and I want to let people know that you're welcome to join the conversation tonight at 218-339-8525. Max Egan is our guest. Back in a few. Well, how early were you when you started to, you know, question your reality, you know, look into what we call the matrix? Was there a critical point in your time where everything shifted for you all at once, or was it something that was incremental over time?
When I was four and I asked my parents why we had to buy land, things shifted for me. You know, I was always walking around before then thinking this was just kind of weird. I felt like I'd been born into the wrong reality. You know, it didn't seem to be this was the way things were supposed to be, you know. And when I was four, my parents told me that we had to buy land. I just couldn't figure that out. I couldn't figure out how you could actually own land, how you could lay claim to part of the planet. And I started researching into the pyramids and stuff when I was eight, so I never really fitted into it at all. I was questioning reality right from when I was a kid. But, you know, I mean, I just kind of forgot about it for a while. It just was all messed up. You know, I got to school. I got kicked out of four schools and I just thought this is all messed up, so I just started working as a musician basically to escape reality. And I was always interested in ancient history and, you know, the fact that there were cover-ups and why would they be hiding all this stuff from us. And as things started getting more serious and you start seeing the world become more and more locked down, you know, it all leads, one thing leads to another, and eventually you sort of start to see the whole picture and it becomes quite serious after a while. And then when September the 11th happened, I thought, well, hang on, time to put the guitar down and actually start speaking out to people about all this because it's important. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at even the lyrics of certain rock groups from the 1980s that aren't necessarily the most vocal when it comes to politics, but there's a lot of messages embedded within their lyrics. You know, I was listening to Wasted Years by Iron Maiden the other day, and I never really noticed one particular part of the song, the lyrics, but it stood out to me. And it was basically, you know, I don't remember the exact lyrics, but, you know, this isn't about looking back in the past, soul is wasted years. It's about realizing that we are in the golden years, and this is the time to make our stand. And, you know, there's just so much beautiful poetry and information about this matrix we live in that we often find in music. Another example is Pink Floyd's The Wall. Both the movie and the analysis of the lyrics. And I remember buying a book called Which One's Pink, which is authored by Roger Waters and someone else. And it's a song-by-song psychoanalysis of the deeper message that he was attempting to send to his audience.
Oh, look, fantastic stuff. I mean, Roger Waters is a very, very intelligent man, and he's always been trying to send this message to the world to just wake up. I think one of the greatest albums ever released is a Roger Waters album called Amused to Death. Absolutely fantastic album. If you haven't heard that one, Alex, I recommend that you go and have a listen to that album. It'll change your life. You know, it's a very, very, it's a critical examination of the human condition, and it's very, very good. And the subtext and the underlying message of the album is absolutely fantastic. So look at that one. Yeah, but he's a very intelligent man, and it's always been there in the music. They're trying to tell us to wake up. And I think this is one of the most important times in human history. I really do. I think this is the first time we've had the tools that we need to make change. And this is the first time we've really been, you know, almost spiritually evolved enough to be able to deal with it and do it properly, you know?
Absolutely. There's also another band I'll mention that's out of Europe. It's called Ladytron, and they have a lot of also interesting messages about our reality. So, Max, I kind of want to talk to you about the pros and cons of what we call where we're at in the so-called movement. There's a lot of things that you brought up in your recent podcast that I've been saying almost word for word the exact same thing, but in a different way. And a big problem that I see is this illusion of separation, the competitive nature, competitive drive, that sometimes pits alternative media hosts against each other instead of working on a collaborative basis, a collective, if you will. And one of the things that's always troubled me as someone that's been in the alternative media since 2004 is the fact that, and I actually did change my location, Max, and went to Dallas to help someone start their own alternative media network, which was supposed to be about a network where people can watch a variety of different hosts, people like Vinnie Eastwood, people like myself, people like, some of Anthony Hilder's video, The Corbett Report, and some other shows that currently air on Access Television. Unfortunately, that project was truly based around how can he, the guy that set it up, that was organizing it, get as many Federal Reserve notes in his pocket as possible. And his business plan was not exactly what I would call the most legit. I've always felt, and I was kind of ranting about this the last segment of last show, that has been our biggest downfall as a so-called movement, our inability at times to come together and work together and bring our resources together, our minds together. I can see people that have interests in art work together. I can see people that have interests in yoga or dance or other forms of human expression work together. And I can't help but feel that it's very important to me to bring this issue onto the air, that we have to look at, we've come all this far and we're working to expand consciously and become better people. But it seems like there's a lot of roadwork that we still have to pave, that we still have to create to get to that place to where we are a collective force, a peaceful force to be reckoned with.
Well, look, there is, and unfortunately a lot of people, their egos get in the way, and you get into a position where you've created yourself online and you end up with a revenue stream and you kind of get a little bit attached to that revenue stream, so then you've got a vested interest in maintaining the fight. And that's what a lot of people do. A lot of people, you know, we're running programs, Alex. Everybody's programmed to think in certain ways and to react in certain ways. And a lot of people are running the program of the fight. You know, a lot of people have been speaking out against this ruling elite and this Illuminati and this horrible corporate system for many years, and it's all they know. You know, they've gotten very good at it, they've gotten very knowledgeable about it, but it's all they know. And they can't imagine a life without the struggle against the system. You know, it's about the struggle, it's about the fight. It's not about winning, it's not about what we would do if we changed things. And it's about the fight. And my opinion is more valid than your opinion. I've got my view, and this is the way it works. And anybody who disagrees with me must be Illuminati or working for the other side, you know. And this is what's going on. And when people, you'll find that you have a difference of opinion with someone, they'll start making up hate videos about you and saying that you're a shill, you're this and you're that. I get it all the time because I have a difference of opinion with them. Then they'll open other accounts and they'll come and they'll start arguments with you on thread and they'll wait until you lose it and you say something, you know, like just go away. You know, you'll say something rude to them because they push you so far. They go, oh, look, got him. Look what he said. He said something rude. See, he's not perfect. Oh my God, he's human. They do this. They do this to try to trap you and pull you away from what it's all about. So you've got to wonder where these people come from, whether they're plants or whatever. But, a lot of the time as well, you've got people in the truth movement and they're attacking this big ghost, this big machine that they can't really get to. They go online, they air their frustration, which is simply a way of thinking that I'm undermining this big beast, but I'm not seeing any change. The world isn't changing, so they get frustrated. So then they find someone they disagree with,
They attack them because they get a response. They get a result. It gives them the energy that they need because they're, you know, expending all this energy in fighting the system and they're not getting anything back. They need a result. They need energy from the fight in order to continue the fight. They don't get that from the system, so they right. attack alternate research workers, you know. And if we could just unite, the whole thing would go away. If, you know, you can't fight it. It's a cloud. It's just an idea. It only exists on paper. We made the whole thing up. You know, the all-powerful Illuminati is only as powerful as we believe it is. That's why they put signs everywhere. That all you got to do is have a few people who control the movie industry and the music industry, and you can put Illuminati signage and stuff everywhere. You put it in corporate logos, put it all over the place so it looks all-powerful, so people perceive that it controls every aspect of their lives. It's all-powerful, and there's nothing you can do about it. But it's only as powerful as we believe it to be. I think that if it was that powerful, they wouldn't have to put the stuff everywhere to tell us how powerful they are and make sure the program sticks, because that's what they do, you know. But whatever they try to do, every time they've tried to lock us down, which they've been trying to do for 2,000 years, every time they paint us into a corner, we just cut a doorway. We always do. Human consciousness creates things. We're incredibly resilient, and we keep finding new ways out. You just can't keep us down no matter how much they're trying. They just can't. And all they're really doing is waking more and more people up the more they try to keep us down. But, you know, we will figure this out eventually, I hope. But there's a lot of division in the truth community because everyone's got a different perspective. And everyone, you know, too many people want to be the guru. They want to be the one that everybody looks up to. You know, I'm the man in shining robes who saved the world. They all want to be this way. And it's not the way to think. I mean, I just present my perspective to people. Do I always get it right? Probably not. But I do my best to just bring my perspective to the world and to say, well, I see a really simple problem and I see a really simple solution. But the first step of the simple solution is for all of you people out there to understand the power that you've got. You've got to realize who you are. There's no one any better or any worse than you on this planet. We're all here equal under our Creator. Right. And everything below us is fiction. We made it all up, you know. So they've just got to figure that out, Alex.
That's a very important point, Max, because, you know, we all, I guess, respond differently to the information, to the awakening that we're having, that something is wrong with this country, with this planet. But some people react with fear, and then some people go, well, if this is going on, there must be some sort of divine presence in all of this. Perhaps it's happening for a reason. Perhaps these things are happening for us, not to us, in order for us to evolve on a soul level. And Max, one of the greatest things that's frustrated me for some reason recently, especially around this 2012 period, is that there's two major polarities that I feel perspectives that are out of balance with reality. One road, one perspective, one paradigm is this idea of a shift in consciousness that happens. Not that it's not going to happen, but a global one where everyone wakes up. And there's also where space gods, Pleiadians, rescue us from the earth changes. This has been a very popular belief since the 1970s, 1980s, from some aspects of the mainstream New Age community. So it deals with being saved by a external force. The other road, the other paradigm, the other false view is the view that we hear from certain individuals that are very popular in the so-called truth movement, the view that says that we are going to die, that 80% of the world's population will be reduced, and there's nothing that we can do about it to save our own lives. And what this does is send people into a very dark state of paralysis. And so I'm just curious about your thoughts on this, Max, because the way that I'm interpreting this is that we go through cycles. And a lot of these cycles are driven by the sun, and the sun and its activity is affected by other celestial changes in our universe. What happens up there affects us down here. So I see dips and waves where sometimes the energy is intense, sometimes it's less intense, but I do see physical reality continuing and an expansion of consciousness. I just don't see total death or annihilation, nor an external savior coming to put us on the spacecrafts as they do their remodeling on Earth.
No, look, I don't see anything like that. I think that the 2012 date was significant. I think it did change the energy. But I think we have to participate in the changes that are coming. And one of the most important things that you said in that was imbalance. And that's really what I see here is a state of imbalance. I think Earth is, at present, this reality that we're in is in a state of imbalance. And it's in the process, the process of rebalancing itself. I think that's what the awakening is. It's a rebalancing of reality.
Well, that's what I appreciate about your message, is that we're discussing an individual shift in consciousness and taking personal responsibility. And I think that's something very important for all of us to focus on and think about what that means in our own lives. Okay, we've got two phone calls coming up from the 347 area code and 214 area code. Max Egan is our guest, thegrowhouse.com. We'll be back in a few. Welcome back to Outside the Box Radio, coming to you from outside the grid. And we've got a phone call from the 214 area code, and we're going to go to that call now. Caller, welcome.
Hi there.
How are you? What's your name, and what state are you calling from?
My name is Daniel. I'm calling from Dallas. And
welcome.
Yeah, we've met. Alex, you know me from our meeting at the some cafe down on Mockingbird. Anyway. I'm wondering.
Good to talk to you again, Daniel. Good to talk to you. I got lots of good memories of some good people that I met in Dallas, and you're one of them.
Well, thank you. Right back at you. Thank you, Alex. So, I'm working on this. Been working on a lot of these hypotheses, and I really like the one presented here by this gentleman. I also find myself wondering if maybe the analogy presented by the Garden of Eden, the Tree of Knowledge of Good and Evil, isn't somehow related to this. And what I mean by that is possibility that this isn't meant to work. That if that analogy fits, the way it might fit is to say that we're on the Tree of Knowledge of Good and Evil, and this tree is no damn good, and we pretty much have to exhaust all the possibilities to recognize that there's a big flaw in the ointment when it comes to assuming that in this life, in this dimension, in this existence, perception, or whatever you want to call it, holograph, we're not able to accomplish where we want to go or be what we want to be, and get all around us, and human nature has some very serious flaws that are really ungappable. I don't know how we can reach the chasm that's caused by the neuroses in our society. And my assertion is that perhaps it's supposed to be broken, and the point isn't for us to fix it or make it work, but for us to become, humble enough to realize that what we're calling ascension or higher consciousness is this awareness that just to accept things as they are and recognize that there is some higher being. If there isn't, then there's a certain amount of futility to any effort we're making. And when some higher being may not be, we have the context all of a sudden of a one single being, but it could be the sum total of all the consciousness for all we know. In fact, to my mind, that's the only way it makes sense is that all of our consciousness is one, perceiving itself as many. Anyway, I don't want to ramble too much, but I just want to throw in there that, we go at these dilemmas that we have, seeking liberty and a higher consciousness and a healed planet with certain perceptions, certain assertions that this is true or that is true, and honestly, I come to the realization that I don't know if any of it's true. I don't know what our reality is.
What I experienced when I was in Peru was such a deep connection, and what I understood from it was that we are already higher consciousness, but we're just disconnected from it. And the problem with a lot of the New Age spiritual ascension theories that people have is that they believe that by putting themselves in a higher energetic state or a meditative state, they will be able to suddenly ascend to fifth dimension or something like that. But what's happening is they're not paying attention to the 3D reality in which they live.
Right.
What's happening?
what's happening here in the 3D reality, why we're not accessing our higher consciousness that we should be accessing is a lot of it is biologically, and a lot of it is through our left brain programming, our belief of what is possible. But there are certain biological mechanisms that are put in place to ensure that we cannot reach a state of what people would term enlightenment, real enlightenment, because our bodies are deactivated through due to basically fungal growths that are all growing through our body that shut down our endocrine system, that shut down our histones, that shut down our biology and make us not accessible to higher consciousness. It's a biological thing. It's a DNA thing. It's a genetic thing, you know. And this is why sugar's in all the foods that they give us as well. Everything you buy has got sugar in it because sugar feeds the fungus and keeps your body locked down. Now, you've got to realize that there are certain controlling hands in the world. There's certain mechanisms that have been put in place to prevent you from ever, ever being you or realizing you or reaching your full potential. And if we fail to address these mechanisms, then we're never going to get anywhere. There's no good waiting to ascend to fifth dimension if you're going to miss out on third dimension. I mean, you came here to get this perspective, to improve reality by your presence in it, to see what you can do with the time that's allotted to you. But so many people want to move back to the ether. Oh, if I meditate, then I can leave this terrible reality and go back to the ether. Well, I think people that do that, they're missing the point of why they're here. You know, so, you know, we need to pay attention. This could be a beautiful place, and I think it's in a process of rebalancing itself. I think that's what this 2012 event was. I don't think it was a non-event at all. I think the energies shifted in December 2012, and consciousness is now in a state of rebalancing itself because it's starting to understand what the actual problem is, and that a lot of the problems that are keeping consciousness down are physical 3D problems. We just have to pay attention and get involved.
Thank you for your perspective and your contribution to humanity in general. Appreciate it, sir.
Well, thank you for saying so. Pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel. Yeah, that was a great call, by the way. You brought some really, really good points.
Thank you, Alex. You guys have a good night. Great show.
And I just want to comment briefly and then go quickly to our phone call from the 972 area code. I think it's really important for us to examine what solutions we're capable of manifesting, either on an individual level or working, you know, as a collective with others, whether we're living off the grid, trying to develop our own independent societies. I want to talk more with Max in the second hour about working with the system as opposed to alternate communities. I think Max and I have some disagreements, but we also have a lot of things that we agree on, so we're going to try to find the middle place. For me, it seems like there are certain things that we are probably responsible for coming up with a solution for a bit. The first and foremost is deprogramming ourselves, which has nothing to do with anybody else or their free will, but becoming the conscious being that we are. But I also think that there is a time to be a objective journalist, even though we are philosophers and we are, you know, some, you know, alternative media hosts and we have different ideas, because when you are objectively reporting the news, you're just stating the facts as to the what is taking place. Sometimes it isn't always easy to come up with a solution. And sometimes when I hear some people demand a perfect solution because they're disturbed by the facts and data that they're getting, sometimes I feel that they're missing the point. There may be a larger creative, divine purpose behind the things that are taking place in order to wake us up to what is wrong and to force us to create what is right. And many times that's only about the individual, what we can do ourselves, when we have no control over others that would like to direct their own free will towards murdering others, raping others, joining mercenary gangs and armies. We can't control them, but we can control ourselves, and I think that that's just something that we should take into consideration, Max.
Oh, look, absolutely. We can control ourselves, and we have a moral obligation to do what's right. I mean, I believe that there's one law to all of creation, and that is to act in service to creation for the Creator. And, you know, do what is right in all that you do. You know, follow the path of Dharma. Do the right thing at the right time in the right way for the right reason. You start living your life like this and you start seeing other people as yourself, live your life in Lakesh. I say that at the end of every radio show, in Lakesh, which means I am another yourself. And the caller we just had on said, look, how he believes there's really only one consciousness. Well, if you look at how your body works, there is. Your body's a computer. It downloads a frequency that you experience as you. So you are completely unique in that and completely unique in your perspective. And yet you come from the same place that I come from. You come from the field, from the ether, because the energy that exists all around us, that is conscious energy. It's consciousness that creates all of reality. So, you know, we can experience reality from a completely different way once we really perceive what it is. And everything I've just said, I mean, that's mainstream science is saying all of that. And I experienced that when I was in Peru, when I was in an altered state in Peru and my higher senses came online. I was able to read all of that energy around me. So I know it's real. And people say, oh, you were on a drug-induced experience. Well, ayahuasca, I don't perceive ayahuasca to be a drug. It's a medicine. There is a spirit to that plant which can take you in and show you how reality works. And everybody who uses it has a similar experience. They always experience a female spirit that shows them things about themselves and shows them how reality works. Any of the visual stuff you get is simply through having more DMT active in your body, which you should have anyway, because your pineal gland should be open. But DMT is produced in your spine. Your body should have much, much higher levels of DMT in it than what it currently has. And that's one of the reasons we don't see outside visible light. So this is why it's important to preserve these traditions, and it's important to look at reality from a bit of a wider perspective than most people do. But, you know, if you have an order to do something and you have a moral obligation to do otherwise, then you always should go with the moral path, the moral high ground. You should always do this. You know, if we were to live our lives in Lakesh and live our lives in a state of respect for each other, I think we could change the world very quickly.
Yes, a wider perspective indeed. Not looking at the universe through the lens of a McDonald's straw. And with that, we're going to take a break. Max Egan is our guest, and we welcome your phone calls, 218-339-8525. Max's website is thegrowhouse.com. And when we come back, we'll take our phone call from the 972 area code. Hour two up next in just a few. Okay, and we're back. Now, we have another phone call from the 972 area code, and we're going to go ahead and bring that up right about now. Caller, welcome. What's your name and state?
Oh, hello?
Welcome.
Oh, hello.
Thanks for calling in. And who might this be?
Lindsay.
Well, welcome to the show.
I followed kind of Max's other interviews, and I have to agree with a lot of things that he's presented and that he said. It's very interesting. I'm wondering about his opinions on some people are feeling that they're moving into kind of a multidimensional existence or reality. I mean, I kind of felt that myself. You know, I was just wondering, you know, his opinions on that are some people, it's really kind of hard to exist right now kind of with other people. It seems like they're in a slower mode of thinking and thought. And they can't really relate to anything you have to say or anything that you perceive. And I'm just wondering if you feel that, just kind of this multidimensional existence, past, present, future, all kind of coinciding at once, you know, at certain times, you know, during the day or, you know, just really psychic intuition type bursts happening, you know, what a person is thinking, you can almost see through walls and know what's happening on the other side. Sometimes it's kind of scary. I know it has to do with just the oncoming energy fields that are kind of solar energy fields, energies from the center of the galaxy and even the center of the cosmos. I've perceived that for many years. I've felt that for many years coming. It's been kind of painful because I feel like something, you know, awful things have been putting obstacles in the way of that development. But I just want to know his opinions on multidimensional existence. Is it something that you think is real, happening?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you're multidimensional beings. But even when people say multidimensional, I think a lot of what they're experiencing is actually the rest of this dimension. They're coming online. See, we're only experiencing about 3% of this reality that we're in. There's all this stuff that exists outside visible light that we're not experiencing. a lot of the stuff that I experienced in Peru was all of these higher senses coming online. And the people you're talking about, these people are probably cut down a lot of sugar and stuff in their diet. So the fungal growths are starting to leave and the systems are starting to come back online. So I believe the earth is in a process of rebalancing itself. I think consciousness is in a process of rebalancing itself. And those that have been keeping up with their diet and keeping, you know, this fungal growth down in their body and keeping themselves in the right energetic state are starting to shift in and out of these higher senses. They're starting to have stuff come online that they may not have experienced before. And that's the thing with higher senses. They come online and you start receiving information and you don't really know how to interpret it because you haven't learned any of this yet. You know it's information, but it's difficult to understand some of it because, I mean, it took you 5 years to learn how to use the five senses that you've got. So when you start having higher ones come online suddenly, it can sort of feel a little bit disconnecting from the world around you. You don't really want to be around other people. You don't really, you know, you can see the problems with the world and you don't really want to participate in it. But I think that's what we're going to see more and more of. But people have to be aware of what's going on in 3D reality. See, this is what I keep saying to people. You're here to experience this. It's what you do with this. You've got to pay attention to what's going on around you. And once you do realize that we all do come from a single source and that we're all here simply to gain the perspective, which is ourselves, of this experience and to help with this realignment, I think a lot of the people that have come here have actually come here to help with the realignment, then, you know, your purpose becomes clear. You can't forget to pay attention to 3D reality, though. You have to participate in it because that's why you're here.
But people, they are very angry towards you, you know, when you express anything beyond just that 3D reality. They just get, there's just this anger vortex.
Well, yeah, it's the predator mind, and it's also very confronting to people, you know, because they're running programs. People are all programmed into this reality. You know, the best thing you can really do, I believe, is to lead by example in all that you do. Be a pleasure to be around. Always improve someone's day if you come in contact with them. Try to improve their day. Don't bring them down. Give them something. Give them some energy. Everybody you come in contact with. If they disagree with your beliefs or what your the information you're attempting to present them, well, don't present it to them. Just present them a you that they would wish to emulate. They would want to be as happy as you are and as joyful as you are and as positive as you are, and they would want to be able to give energy to people the way you give it to them. Lead by example in what you do, and they will change by themselves. Their energy will change. They'll start emulating that energy, and that's how you can do it on an energetic level. You don't have to give it to them with information which is going to challenge their belief systems, because this is very, very deep programming that people are running, and it can be very, very confronting. You come to someone who's 40 or 50 or 60 years old, and you're telling them that their life up to that point has been completely meaningless, that everything they did was worth absolutely nothing, and that everything they thought was true about reality is actually false. That's virtually what you're presenting them with, and that's very confronting. So you've got to, as I've said before, you've got to undo the sequence. And the first part of undoing the sequence is for them to understand who and what they are. And the best way to give them that is to be all that you can be and lead by example in all that you do when you're around these people.
Well, some people, I think, you know, are really surrounded by sinister forces. I mean, just I can see just absolute dark energies just swirling around people. It's sometimes it's really scary to encounter that. You know, and these people are really kind of possessed. And I don't know whether to call it archons. I mean, it almost seems like this energy is a mechanical energy that's being produced almost like from an artificial intelligence somewhere. And it is comprised of this absolute dark energy and somewhere, some other dark dimension. And you see it just like race. Just surrounding people.
You're right, Maggie. It's all over the conspiracy research community, that the anti-human almost sediment, the anti-spirituality aspect, and there's a lot of truth in what you're talking about. One of the things that I was relieved about when I left Portland, where I was doing my television show for 6 years, is that I no longer was glared at by people in the supermarkets. or people in pubs or people in restaurants that would recognize me and the things that I talked about. It's a little different than just being online. Because it was a community access TV show, it was my community. And so that was a lot to go through, to have people that you didn't even know sending you dark energy, glaring at you in public. And definitely that was a very tough experience, but that's also one of the beauties of living off the grid. I want to turn it back over to Max, because I know, Max, you've been attacked pretty heavily for every time you try to go in a more spiritual direction or understanding of what's going on. And how have you dealt with that? How do you shield that? How do you move beyond that so you're not affected?
Well, it's very difficult. I mean, sometimes you do get affected. I get sucked in sometimes, you know. People start baiting me on threads, and I'll get pulled into it. I will. I'll start making comments that are completely unconscious, you know. You know, a few minutes later, I think, oh, what did I say that for, you know, and I delete it, and I think, why did I go there? Why did I get back to that point? And I find it interesting that I get pulled into it all the time. There's these forces that try to pull you in, and they succeed. I mean, I'm aware of all of this stuff, and I get pulled into it all the time. You know, so I'm not perfect. I don't pretend to be perfect. But there is this predator mind that is there, that has superimposed itself over human consciousness. You called it the Archons before. A very, very interesting concept, the concept of the Archons, if you look at Gnostic teachings, the Nag Hammadi writings. I actually read the Nag Hammadi writings just before I left to go over on my trip overseas last year, and I saw a lot of evidence to support what they say in those writings. And you really can, if you look at our society, why it is so machine-like, why everything in our society is designed to mimic and imitate that which is natural, that which we already have. It's like we create these cheap, clunky versions of it, and why human consciousness and human science seems to be trying to reverse engineer life. Like, why are we looking for the God particle? What for? What the God particle? What a piece of material, a piece of matter that's going to create consciousness. We're not going to find it. Consciousness exists in the field. Consciousness is divine. You're not going to find that spark of creative consciousness anywhere in matter. So why are we even bothering to search for it? Is it us that's searching for it, or is it, as the Gnostics suggested, an Archon consciousness that has superimposed itself over human consciousness, that is using the creativity of humankind to create what it is searching for? Is that why we are so intent on creating this machine society and looking for artificial life? So you look for evidence of this, and you see the you see the evidence of it all around you, and then you look at what the Gnostics say, and they say, well, yeah, this is what's going on. They've been telling us this for years, and every time the Gnostics try to gain any repute, or you know, any, they start making any headway, they get stomped out pretty quickly. And then you find books such as the teachings of Don Juan, the Castaneda books, where they talk about the predator mind. They talk about the fact that this mind has superimposed itself over human consciousness. And you start seeing evidence of this. And then with what I experienced in Peru, what I experienced, the connection to all of nature and what we should actually be, well, it starts to make a lot of sense that this may indeed be what has happened. This may indeed be the cause of evil, the origin of evil that everyone's been searching for. Why do we do the things we do? Why do we have this dark side? Where does this dark energy come from? Why is our society so disconnected from nature? Why is it so opposite of what it should be? It's like everything's backwards. Everything is an imitation of what it should be. Even the legal system, the straw man that you're given, the birth certificate, the whole legal system, which is designed to emulate or imitate natural law, but natural law frees you and legislation enslaves you. So it's an imitation. It's been superimposed over itself, and it's the reverse of what it should be. And everything that they've done to our society and they've done to our consciousness, they've imitated it and they've turned it up on its head and made it the reverse of what it should be. And they implant distrust in everybody. There's so much distrust in the truth movement. I get attacked all the time, and I do get sucked into it sometimes because I'm not perfect. Of course I get sucked into it. But everybody finds everybody else as a threat to their little boxed view of reality, to the program that they're running. And most of society, you know, 99.999% of it is programmed. And people have to wake up to this and just let the programs break down. But they've got to be prepared to think outside of the box. They've got to be prepared to step back and really look at, you know, look at reality for what it is.
What will happen to these people? I feel like they're about to be left behind like zombies. You know, I think people who are waking up are sort of the survivors, and those people are just kind of going to be kind of the walking dead, just consumed by this sort of dark dimension. What do you see in the future?
I see us leaving it all together. I see the whole thing becoming good, becoming rectified. I think that we are connected to the field, all of us together. And I think no matter how much this dark Archon predator mind takes control of people within the system, I don't think that they're going to have a choice. I think that consciousness is going to realign itself as the planet realigns itself, as this reality realigns itself. And I think that our creator, whatever you perceive that creator to be, whether you perceive it to be God or whether you perceive it to be the Earth Mother or Yahweh or Allah or whatever you perceive your creator to be, I would suggest that it isn't Yahweh though. That's another story. Mm-hmm. But whoever you perceive your creator to be, I believe that the creator has faith in humankind, in the mind of mankind. They have faith in us to be able to realign ourselves and take the rest of reality with us. You know, if human consciousness is all connected, then once this balance happens, once we start participating in the world around us and exercising the power that we naturally have, then things will naturally realign themselves and the rest of the world will come with us. But it's got to be done through participation in this 3D reality though. You've got to know the power that you've got. You've got to understand that we're all created equal by the Creator and that everything that exists beneath us is all fiction. We made the whole thing up. It's not real. It only exists on paper. And until we can respect ourselves enough to respect those around us and work in unison and harmony with these people around us, then it's never going to work. You know, I mean, you might find some person with dark energy you can't work with. Well, that's fine. Leave them be and work with someone else. But don't change your energy. Stay in that positive energy, even if they're dark. You can still love them. You can still see that they're only dark because they're programmed, they're conditioned to have the belief system that they've got. And the best thing that you can do is lead by example in all that you do and make sure you maintain the correct energetic state while you participate in the world. And try not to get pulled into the little confrontations. I mean, it is hard because, like I said, I get pulled into them. Now, we all do. And they seem to be escalating at the moment. There's a lot of this dark energy out there trying to derail this shift that's happening, because the shift is happening right now. We are in the process of this shift right now. It's not something that was just, they were going to flick a switch and it was going to change. It's happening over a period. Even the mind said that it will happen over a period. And we're in the process of it now, but people have to participate.
Well, it's very intense.
We got a break coming up. Go ahead, Maggie. A lot of great points, by the way.
Okay, thank you. Oh, well, I'm just saying it's physically intense. I mean, I can physically feel when there's a great deal of solar activity, and it's you know, how to deal with the kind of the pain that it causes, a physical pain.
And we'll be back in just a bit. And I understand what you're saying, Maggie. There's a lot of people going through that. And that's why grounding and being in your own space and protecting your mind is extremely important. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. 218-339-8525. Max, you were telling me something very interesting during the break relating to the Nag Hammadi text, which refers to the Archons and the Demiurge and this matrix-like system of control. What did they have to say about the sun?
Well, when the Earth was created, apparently Sophia was created. The Earth was a creation of Sophia, basically. Sophia morphed into the Earth, if you will. This was according to the Nag Hammadi text. But when the sun was created and this whole solar system was created, according to the Gnostics, the sun, whose name is Sabaoth, actually aligned itself with the Earth. And they agreed consciously, a conscious agreement to always act in harmony with each other, which is why the sun has increased in temperature like 30% in the last few thousand years, but the temperatures remain the same on Earth. And when there's sunspot activity, there's certain things that happen with human consciousness, and we have a very, very symbiotic relationship with the sun. I mean, all life on the planet is a result of the sun. If the sun wasn't where it is and we weren't
there in relation to it, then there would be no life. And it's very interesting that Earth is an organic planet in what is essentially an inorganic solar system, and that this particular solar system is based very, very heavily on celestial mechanics and mathematic principles. It's a very, very mathematically constructed solar system, more than any other ones. If you look out and start doing research into what solar systems they have found, which are outside this one, which is not many, but they've found a few, they don't operate on celestial mechanical principles the same as this one does. So this is a very, very mechanical solar system, and yet we have this very, very symbiotic relationship with the sun that no other planet has. So yeah, that's just an interesting part of the Nag Hammadi legend, the Sapphire myth, which is quite an interesting story. It's actually fantastic mythos that they have around the creation of the Earth and the creation of this solar system, the creation of the Archons and the Predator Mind and the whole thing. It's very, very interesting to hear their take on it.
We had Laura Eisenhower on the show about 2 weeks ago. Very, very interesting guest. She's also going to be speaking at the Free Your Mind conference. And for those that would like to, you know, learn more about the Archons and the Sophiic myth, Laura has done an amazing job putting a great wealth of information and data together. I want to take a step back here and talk about some of the really incredibly distorted ways that some people are viewing reality. And you, I haven't heard you ever really get agitated, except for one time, and I understand why. You were on the Truth or Girls radio show, and a particular individual came up, Dallas Goldbug, whoever his real name is. And I remember hearing what you were saying about, you know, and I want you to kind of explain to the audience, for those that haven't heard, who is Dallas Goldbug, because, you know, we're talking about a person that pretends to be a conspiracy researcher that's legitimate and takes people, including myself. He said, I was Mark Dice. No, I'm 5'7". I'm not 6 foot. Mark Dice is over 6 foot. I'm pretty sure I'm not 6 foot. I'm pretty sure Mark Dice is not 5'7". And so, you know, I just kind of shrugged it aside, whatever. Shortly after what you talked about on the Truth or Girls radio show with Morning Mayan and another individual, I went to someone's house here in the San Luis Valley that was going to let me use their internet to do my show. And he was trying to tell me, because he was somewhat in this information, he said he was a like mind. He was getting angry with me, visibly angry with me, Max. And this was just a week after hearing you on the Truth or Girls radio show, that I did not believe him, that Luke Kurdowski of WeAreChange.org was the Arizona shooter. He was actually yelling at me. And this is I had a guest on, and I'm in someone's home, and they're yelling at me, telling me to put up the pictures of Luke Kurdowski next to the Arizona shooter. And that was a rough moment, Max, to see that, you know, that there is such a strong degree of cognitive failure, a major thinking malfunction, where people can think that two people that don't even look alike are the same person. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, and if there's perhaps something more sinister to the Dallas Goldbug, we'll call it operation.
Oh, it's a COINTEL operation, absolutely. I mean, whether he knows he's doing it or whether he's just programmed to do it, I mean, I don't know, but it's an absolute COINTEL operation. I mean, the information that you see there is so blatantly false. And it's put there, I believe, to discredit the truth movement. So you can show how crazy these people are. And look, I mean, like you say, when you see someone like that and they don't look anything like each other and you've got some guy yelling at you about it, these people are mentally unstable. So that's the sort of person, the sort of people that he's reaching. Now, these are mentally unstable people that are liable to do bad things. And it also puts you in danger because, you know, he's claiming that you're members of an elite, you're a member of an elite family that's working to enslave the whole world. And you're out there, you've got a radio show, you're living in town, and then suddenly somebody comes along and puts a bullet in your head because they believe that you're this terrible guy from this banking family who's responsible for the death of all these people, because he got it from Dallas Goldbug. So it endangers your life. It drives huge wedges into the truth community and gets everybody to question everybody else. It's distrust. It's this predator mind. That's what it's all about. But, you know, he may not even realize that he's doing it. He may totally believe what he's doing is legitimate research. That's the thing. So, you know, you've got to really look at it. But I would suggest that it's a COINTELOP. You know, the way it was put together and Sandy Hook and the whole actors thing, I mean, this whole thing seems to have been put there like a bad tabloid to paint all conspiracy researchers as crazy. And that all conspiracy theory is completely ridiculous, you know. I mean, if you believe 9/11 was an inside job, then you believe that one of the guys in Sandy Hook was Tony Hawk, and you believe that Jodie Foster plays the role of Julia Gillard. You believe that what's the comedian Bill Hicks is Alex Jones, you know. So you're crazy. You're crazy, and not only that, but it was one of these conspiracy theorists that went and shot all those kids to begin with. His mum was a prepper, so she was feeding all this information to him. So you guys are all crazy, so we need Homeland Security to go and take out all these alternative researchers because they're domestic terrorists. They're crazy. They believe all this crazy stuff, and we need to tidy up this place and get rid of these people. That's what it's all about, you know, and you can see it. It's so obvious. I mean, the information he presents is so blatantly false and blatantly wrong that you know that it's a psyop, either that or he's just a very, very sick man, you know, with a very, very extremely damaged mentality.
Well, I can't say it. There were people that warned me before I went over there, but lesson learned. Maybe he's listening now, wondering, you know, what this government agent is up to. Okay, moving on to some of our more serious topics, at least solution-oriented. And, you know, we're talking about the reality where we're going beyond money as it currently is. And I'm curious what your ideas are on that. You've talked a little bit about credit unions, and there's a website called Solari.com. I forget her name because it's been a long day, but I've interviewed her many times, and she's been advocating this for at least 6 or 7 years.
Catherine Austin Fitz?
Yes.
Yeah. Look, I haven't really looked into what she says on Solaris. She did feature Transformation on there when I released it, so I was pleased with that. Someone sent me a link, but I haven't really looked into it. I mean, the whole money system is a very, very tricky issue because money is something that we always use, so we can't just sort of get rid of it all of a sudden. And I don't like the idea of a credit-based system. I don't like the idea of a digital monetary system. I like the idea of there being no money, but I think it'll be a gradual process to get to a stage where we figure out that we don't actually need this stuff. That's why I believe we need to find a way of reining this system in. And I believe the way to do it is to understand that the government are simply public trustees, regardless of what legislation they put in place, regardless of what rules they've written down in books. You know, we are what created society, and society is what created government. They're way down the food chain. They're there as trustees of what we hold, which is the earth. You know, the earth is us. It's not something that we have to earn. It's not something that we have to buy. It is ours. This is what this society has basically done is it's dispossessed everybody, and now it's trying to, it manages to keep them enslaved by just being alive. So we have to address that situation and realize that it's just a small group of people that are controlling it, and actually the whole government situation is a trust agreement. These are public trustees. They're all in breach of trust, and we have to step above it and start, you know, regaining things a little bit that way. You have to rein the system in, get rid of all the toxins out of our environment, all the toxins out of the food, all the chemicals and fluoride out of the water, and send us back down the track to what we should be. And eventually I think we'll get to a situation where we don't need money. But at the moment, I guess it's a necessary evil. You know, the most positive system I've seen so far is mathematically perfected economy. Mike Montagna's mathematically perfected economy. It's very hard to get your head around. I'm not mathematical at all, so it's difficult for me. But it sounds like it works. When I had him on the show and he explained it to me, I remember thinking, yeah, this could actually work. And I think that would be a great stepping stone to get to a situation where we didn't need money at all. Because really, I don't think we would need it. If we come back online, if our higher senses come back online, which will only happen once we get the toxins and stuff out of the environment, then I don't think we'll need it. People think that they can't imagine a world without money. They can't imagine a world without commerce. But I think it all comes down to a state of your consciousness. And I think that once their higher faculties started to come back online, they'd soon realize that it rarely doesn't work that way at all.
And take a look at this for those listening. There's been a lot of information that we've seen about the sun and the Earth's weakening magnetic field, and holes in the Earth's weakening magnetic field, and information that is indicating that M-class flares in the future will have the effect of X-class flares. And because we have such a strong dependency on a centralized electric grid, if something were to impact that, it could impact banks, it could impact satellites. It doesn't mean that we couldn't bounce back from it or that it would be permanent, but at the moment, it could cause a serious malfunction, breakdown of the world economic system. And the History Channel keeps referring to this as a end-of-the-world type of event. And since I have become interested in solar flares, fascinated with them, beginning in 2007, 2008, and by the way, at the age of 8 years old, I used to have dreams of a solar flare hitting the planet and a powerless reality, and that was not implanted into me by any form of predictive programming. I was actually having these dreams. And so what I'm wondering, Max, is if this is a part of the shift. If we go back into a situation where there's no more money and there's some sort of event that forces people to come together and grow their own food, and in a way, for those of us that are not comfortable with the direction that the police state has gone, basically being our own police. Some could say the word militia, but not, you know, fanatical, but people that defend their own neighborhoods, defend their women without the use of police. I see that as a big, big part of becoming free, when we're no longer dependent on 911, when we know the neighbors across the street. And this is why, Max, I think that we do need alternative communities, because some of us have been trying our entire lives within the system. We've been trying our entire lives to have meetups with people that are in the city that don't have the time to get together and go, how are we going to get off the grid together because there's too many parties going on? This was what I was competing with the whole time, Max, in Portland, was people within the system, within the city, within the grid that never wanted to take the time to come together to a meetup. And if they did, it was because they were looking for me to be their leader or a Portland version of Alex Jones. And I was looking to have more of a community, but I wasn't able. So I changed my location to an area where the neighbors do know each other. And no, we're not exactly an alternative community, an alternate community, because many of us still need money to go buy things within the city. Gasoline is a big cost. Sometimes it takes money to get wood. But for me to be out here so far from mainstream America, it's challenging me to develop those social skills, to be friends with other people that might think that I'm a freak show just for having an alternative perspective. There's some people that know what I do in the Valley and they like me out simply because there's an independent thinker in the Valley. And that's all it is. And so I'm working, Max, to not let that stuff bother me, but to be optimistic that maybe we can do something together, because I'm starting to see signs. There's more people moving into the area of the San Luis Valley that are finding me on Facebook. Some of them are YouTube viewers. And I've been really frustrated living out here in sometimes negative 30 degree weather, but I'm starting to see a shift. And I think that more people are going to be moving up here in the future. And so, I mean, I think this is just kind of a message for everyone living wherever you are in the United States or elsewhere. If we can find a way to work together, those of us that are like minds that don't want to screw each other over financial issues or anything else, then I think we have a chance. But I do still think that there are some ways that we can work within the city or the system, and that there's a place for that too. I think the answer, at least for me, is to look into my own heart and see where that's leading me. And I think that's the answer for every listener in the audience, for them to follow their heart and listen to their inner guidance as to what their own solution is going to be. And where they are environmentally is going to play a really big part.
Well, look, it is. I mean, everybody should be growing food. I've been saying this for years. You know, you've got to start putting gardens in. We've got a lot of gardens in down New South Wales. We just used to plant them randomly a couple of years ago, but that's kind of slacked off. But almost everybody I know has got vegetable gardens in. And, you know, alternate communities are great to get off the grid, but my argument is that too many people go out there and they attempt to create a working model of an alternate society so that they can then show it to the world. I mean, they don't participate in the one that we've got, and we need to save this one, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of power in having one foot in each world. And as I'm trying to do, keep one foot connected to the internet and keeping the show going, and yet experiencing nature. We'll be back. Last segment, Max Chicken. 218-339-8525. Good question. Question a lot of us are asking ourselves, and I want to thank Max Egan for being with us tonight. We've got another 10 minutes. You've got time if you'd like to make a phone call. But a quick announcement to the audience, if you'd like to donate to this show, donate to some of my future travels to Philadelphia, if you'd like to contribute in any way. I'm still trying to get my own internet, but it's not very cheap. But eventually I will have my own internet, and I might start doing a daily show here on American Freedom Radio. But the email to type into PayPal for anyone that would like to contribute to the show is alex_ansary@hotmail.com, alex_ansary@hotmail.com. And you can also keep up to date with other programming and content that I create, and also past television shows and interviews over at youtube.com/alexansary. And I want to turn the mic back to Max at this time to continue your thought from the last segment on creating those independent communities based on mutual respect and things of that nature to create the reality around us in these times, in these what seem to be troubling times to some people. But what I see, Max, is also opportunity. As more people are affected by these economic problems, they're going to start looking around for other people that think just like them, that understand mutual respect, that have the love frequency within them. And as we start to do that more and more organically everywhere we are, whether we're off the grid or on the grid, when we start to really see that those steps moving forward, we're going to see some beautiful change.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people, they want to build ultimate communities and get off the grid, but they go away to do it. They disconnect from their society to do it, and they want to create a working model so they can say, see, look what we can do. Well, you know, they don't need to hear that because they already know what we can do. They just prevent us from doing it all that we can. So I believe the idea is, if you're in a position to create an alternate community and like a cooperative with maybe 20 families within your community, grab 19 other families and start a garden cooperative and start your own bank. I mean, all this sort of stuff. You can do all sorts of stuff to disconnect from the system and create ripples in your own community. This is something else that I'm going to talk about in the Full Circle Project. It's called UAC, the Urban Agricultural Cooperative, that we want to set up. And you could do one of these in every town. And you could basically create your own system of funding for your own projects and your own things that you want in your community by means of these cooperatives, these alternate communities you can create within your community. And that way we don't leave this community behind. Because if we leave it behind, we've got to remember that the ship of state is heading for the rocks. We can't allow the ship of state to continue in the way it's going, in the direction it's going. So there's no good stepping away and building an alternate community over there. We need to create ripples within this community and rein this system in while we still have the means to do it. And I think we will. I don't think they can do anything to keep us down, no matter what they do to try to lock us down and lock human consciousness down. Every time they paint us into a corner, we just build a doorway. They cannot control what we can create. We are capable of incredible things, and I think that this is the time we're going to see that. The more they try to lock us down, the more we're going to rise up and the more resilient we're going to get. We're going to start realizing that we've had enough. Enough is enough, and we don't have to do what these people say. They're just public trustees. They're all in breach of trust. The whole system they're trying to force on us only exists on paper anyway. We are the most powerful creatures on this planet, and we are capable of much, much more than what we're being allowed to do. And I think we're going to do it. We're going to realize this, and we're going to change the direction. And then the sheeple will simply follow, because that's what sheeple do. And all the people that are programmed, all the people that are locked down and kept toxic and kept disconnected because of what they eat and the situations that they're in, they'll just simply come along by default once the enlightened people start living their lives in a different way. And that's all we really have to do, is start living our lives in a different way. But ultimately it comes through discovering our own personal power, because until we discover that, then we're not going to find a way of reining this system in. You know, we keep believing that we have to do it within their political parameters, but we don't. We just have to realize who and what we are and realize that we can change things very quickly. So right. I think that's what's going to happen, brother.
and that the archonic system may not be as powerful as we've been led to believe. And perhaps we're in this to learn about how powerful we actually are. And having said that, we have two phone calls waiting in the wing, but we have only 6 minutes left. So now let's go to the 76 area code. Hello.
76. Hey, Alex.
Welcome.
Hey, this is Jay. How's it going? Actually, I had a question for Max about the aerial spring and how that affects the teleconnection between the sun and the earth if they put inert substances like aluminum up there.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Max.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That breaks down, you know, puts a barrier up there. Everything they're doing basically to disconnect us. That's what it's all about. They say, oh, they're doing it to protect us from global warming. Well, it's actually multi-platform. The aerial spraying is multi-platform. They can deliver any types of biology they want to the planet, nanoparticulates. They can put any type of metals and stuff in the atmosphere to reduce the sun's rays. So, yeah, it absolutely has an effect. But like I said, I don't think they can do anything. No matter how much they paint us into a corner, we just build a doorway. They can't lock us down. It's not going to work. Nothing that they try to do is going to work to prevent us from being all that we can be, no matter how hard they try.
All right. Well, yeah, I think that's kind of more in relation to what Alex was saying earlier with the CMEs and them constantly drilling us with this idea of a solar flare. And then I was reading a paper about addressing what they called double rebound from the spraying if the spraying were to stop and no longer be available.
Well, you know, I don't think it'll work. I think that it's far more powerful. It's far more energetic. See, they're only looking at things on a physical level. They're not really seeing things from a consciousness level or a spark of creativity level or an energetic level. They can't understand it. You know, so I think that what's happening will not just be merely physical. And there is no physical barrier that can be put between, who you are and an elevation in consciousness between yourself and the energy that comes from the sun or that comes from the center of the galaxy or wherever it's coming from. But, I mean, I don't think there's anything that can really disconnect you from reality completely. Nothing physical that can do it because you're an energetic being. You're an electromagnetic being. Everything you experience is electromagnetic and the whole universe is electric. It's living. It's living conscious energy. There is no physical barrier that can be 100% effective against that energy. I think that no matter what they try, I think they're doing it all out of necessity. They're not doing it because they think, well, it's going to do this. They're doing it because they have to, because consciousness is rising. People are waking up in droves, and the energy is just changing. Things are just different. I think it's a very significant time in history, and there's nothing that they're going to be able to do to keep us down. I just don't think that it'll happen. I think that consciousness wants to realign itself, and that's what's going to happen.
Well, I want to thank you, Jay, for the phone call. Now, I got to go move now to the 505 area code. But before I do, I just want to say there's been some theories, ideas, beliefs about the harmonic convergence, an energy shift around the year 1987. And I remember being 7 in 1987, and that's when I saw my first chemtrail. So I've always wondered if there's a correlation between when they started to spray and when we started to go through this shift. And with that, let's go to the 505 area code. You've got about 1 minute. Welcome, caller.
Hey, I was just going to comment on what he said about the fact that there's nothing they can do to stop the consciousness awakening. I was just wondering, like, do you think that that's what this whole World War III thing that Albert Pike was talking about, that was going to usher in the new consciousness? Do you think that's why they want to start World War III, is so that they can stifle the blooming of consciousness in us?
Yeah, look, it's multi-platform. A lot of it's codes, a lot of it's rituals, just blood sacrifices. There's all sorts of reasons to do it. But they've got to keep us in fear. They've got to keep us in that fear energy. And even when we think of sunspot activity, and it's the end of the world. Well, no, it's only the end of electricity. It's not the end of the world. You know, it's very, very different than the end of the world. So everything they do is about fear. They've got to keep us in that state of fear, in that state of lower vibration, because when we're in that state, we don't really have the ability to discover ourselves. We don't really have the ability to stand in our power. That's the most important thing that they're trying to prevent, is from us discovering who we are. So, I mean, that's what everything is ultimately related to. It's all about that, and it's all about trying to keep us down. But like I said, I don't think they're going to be able to do it.
They can fill the air full of charged particles. They can harp us. They can achieve a lot of stuff, and they do have a lot of control. But we keep changing the playing field. We keep shifting our perspective. We keep changing, and they can't keep up with that. And ultimately, I don't think that there's anything they can do to wipe out the spark of sentience and the spark of life that is the human mind, that is mankind, that is this creation. I just don't think they can do it. It's too powerful for that.
Okay, well, here's the only thing I have to say, like, kind of contrary to what you said, is that I do believe if they reach the point where they do trigger some kind of nuclear war, I know that Bill Richardson just went and met with North Korea. They're talking about North Korea wants to attack us and stuff like that. I do believe that once this war goes hot, that there really isn't going to be much that we can do to stifle the regress back into the Dark Ages for us.
Well,
and that's
a very good point.
Right,
that's a very good point. We'll keep exploring that idea and a few other things, and we'll talk a little bit about North Korea in a future episode. Thank you for your call, and thank you, Max Hegan, for being here.
My pleasure, Alex.
And I'd like to thank everybody else that contacted me during the show and messages through Facebook. There's been a lot of response from the show, and I look forward to seeing you next week, and we'll talk to you then. Take care, everybody.